Hello and welcome to some True Blue. What am I calling this again?
The lineup. The
lineup. All right. Not lead. I almost said leading off just to like hijack the.
To be fair, we're leading off the lineup podcast.
What's funny here is I almost called the leading off podcast the morning podcast because like that's how it, you know, it kind of makes sense in my head. Yeah, but you could also listen to it whenever you want, dear listener.
Yeah, that's true.
Whenever it pleases you.
And this podcast, the lineup, we record at different times. So this time it's the nighttime podcast. Sometimes it's the morning podcast. Sometimes it's the midday podcast.
Do you think you swear more frequently when we record at night? Is this like Dodgers After Dark?
Wait a minute. That's a good question.
True blue indeed.
Yeah, that's a great question. I will think about it. I was swearing before we recorded. Because of the thing, we'll get into it. I think it's more mood than time related.
All right. Well, we've got five questions from Craig. We're gonna talk about Tony Gonsolin. We're gonna kind of catch up in general on the week, and then I really like the trivia question that Eric has for me. We're gonna do all of that after this. When we were doing our preseason-y, spring training-y podcasts after the strike had ended. The lockout, excuse me. There was a lot of like, is Tony Gonsolin gonna how many games is Tony Gonsolin gonna like actually start? Like, that was, I think, a real question. Would he always be piggybacked? Would he turn into sort of more a Ross Stripling-y role where he's relieving half the time and getting kind of spot starts here and there? And as baseball so frequently does, showed us to be, or me at least, an idiot.
I don't know. I seem to remember us both talking about, like, I remember the argument going something like, well, we know Gonsolin's going to be undefeated and all this, but I remember I was thinking, like, what do you think, like a 2.15 ERA? And you're like, no, it's got to be in the ones. And I was like, okay.
You know, that's not how I remember these conversations. No, it's not.
Look, I remember a lot of stuff, like, weird random stuff from like years ago, but sometimes on the podcast I have a hard time remembering what we talked about last week, let alone April or March. I believe you. That's clearly what we were going at. And Tony Gonsolin coming into the season, like last year, he basically like hurt all year, like shoulder soreness. It like affected him when he was not on the, he had two different 60-day injury list stints. It was like, and when he was pitching, like he was affected by that. He very rarely went deep. His command was way off. His fastball was down. I think he averaged less than four innings a start. And right now, as we record this, Tony Gonsolin 8-0 leads the majors with a 1.42 ERA through 12 starts. So yeah, and it's one of those like, well, yeah, you know, the Dodgers are hosting the All-Star game this year. And you're thinking, like, what if they actually get a pitcher to start the All-Star game? Like, obviously, a lot has to go into that and everything. And you're thinking, well, Walker Buehler's the opening day guy. He was fourth in Cy Young. Clayton Kershaw had, like, the crazy hot start. Like, maybe, you know, what if he gets sort of the veteran, the Hall of Fame career nod since he actually has never started the All-Star game? But, like, you know, if he was still pitching well before he got hurt, and then, but no, it, like right now, if, not saying Tony Gonsolin's going to start the All-Star game, but like if a Dodgers starter starts the All-Star game, it's going to be him, like pitcher wise. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But I think the most important thing, we talked about like last year, not really pitching deep into games. He's pitching deep like every game and deep in a like current status of baseball sense, like he's not completing games or anything because nobody does, but he's going six like every game. He went into the seventh on Tuesday. Now there's an issue. I talked about it, or I think we talked about it previously, where like counting the minors and the postseason and the majors, he's only pitched like more than 81 innings in a professional season once. And that was in 2018. He fell like one out shy of 140 innings. And he's already at like 63 this year. So there's going to, it's going to be an issue, like, figuring out, like, how far do you sort of push him and stuff. Because I think there's been a times, like, you know, maybe they could have even stretched him a little farther in some of these games, but I think they're sort of being mindful of that. But when he's pitching really well, and he's just been in command, and he's been doing really well. To show how sort of rare him going six innings is, he only did it five times from 2019 to 2021, and he did it zero times last year. So in this current sort of nine-plus year run of the Dodgers, it was eight division titles and then a 106-win wild card last year. They've only had seven pitchers with streaks of at least six straight starts with six innings pitched. Clayton Kershaw, of course, did it 11 times, 11 different times during that stretch, which is amazing. He topped out at 23 twice. He also had a 22-game streak. This is a rare pre-trivia for you, and I want to see how many you can name. Of the other five, because Gonsolin is obviously the seventh one, one person did it five times, one person did it three, two did it twice each, and then one other person besides Gonsolin did it once.
What happens is you send me a Google Doc that has show notes on it. I skip everything until the trivia question, so I have the entire episode to think about it and try to not look like as big of a fool as I often do. And you've snuck this in.
To stall while you think of that, I will point out that Tony Gonsolin, in his starts this year, 12 starts, three of them, including on Tuesday night, he's only allowed one hit. Now, allowing one hit in a game, excellent, right, for a pitcher, for a starter. You know, allowing no hits is, you know, the ideal. Reed Detmers is pitching as we record right now for the Angels against the Dodgers on Wednesday. And he threw a no-hitter earlier this year, one of his, handful of first career starts. I don't remember which one it was. I think I want to say it was, like, his 10th career start or something like that. But I wonder what the opposite of that was. I was thinking, like, what would it take to be an all-hitter, like, for a pitcher to throw an all-hitter? And my first thought was, like, is it every batter he faces gets a hit, and then you're just out after, like, zero innings or whatever. But I think that's too narrow and rare. So I think it has to be, like, a pitcher who stays in long enough but gives up a hit to, like, all nine starters. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts on what an all-hitter should be?
I know what a no-hitter should be. Mm. And are you doing this just to goad me into talking about this?
If you want to talk about it, we can talk about it. I had a different angle on it that I thought, if you didn't want to talk about it, we could do it this way.
So the Cardinals Mikolas had a 8 2/3 no hitter going, and then gave off a kind of a scorcher that was still almost caught by Hader. And I was like, oh, and so I was, you know, not paying attention. I wasn't watching the Cardinals game, but I saw, 9-1 was the final score. So I'm like, it must have been a home run that ended the no hitter. Because if it's a no-no, frequently called no-nos, no hitters are, then he didn't also give up a run, but he had given up a run. And I think a no hitter, in the same way that no hitters don't count if the team lost. So a no-hitter must be a game in which no hits give up and a win was recorded. I also think it should be a shutout. I think that the no-no indicates no hits, no runs. And I let off our pre-show babble with this, and you disagreed.
I disagree strongly. I think no-no is like a weird, antiquated term that doesn't actually describe what a no-hitter means. It's like a old slang, and... like, if you go back to, like, old early no-hitters, like, you know, with old-timey radio announcers and stuff, they'd call it, he pitched a no-hit, no-run game, you know, that kind of a thing. And it's just the way they describe it. They have to say no-run to, like, additionally describe it.
I'm trying to look up the etymology of no-no. So I just Googled what is a no-no, but I didn't add the word baseball. So Merriam-Webster says a no-no is something unacceptable or forbidden.
Right. It's taboo. Yeah, that's what it is. So that's my theory on this, is the term no-no is a no-no. So no, my thought is, not only do I think that I'm okay with teams scoring like a billion runs while getting no hit and still counting it as a no-hitter, but like I'm willing to go a little further. And so for the Pirates were on the other end of this on Tuesday, and man, felt bad, like, because Mikolas, the double that he was one strike away from the no-hitter, and the double that ended it was on his 129th pitch. So he was like clearly going for it. But the Pirates have already been no hit this year. However, that game does not count for Major League Baseball standards as a no hitter, because the Pirates won that game 1-0. They were at home. The Reds, Hunter Green, and I think, I can't remember the name of the reliever who pitched the eighth, but they allowed no hits. I even think that since that was a completed normal game, that should also count as a no hitter, even though it was a loss. And the pitching team that allowed no hits only pitched eight innings, the same way that a road pitcher can pitch a complete game. Eight inning loss.
Maybe convince you otherwise. I'm on the new Wikipedia for no hitter, and finding out that the global sanctioning body, the WBSC and MLB, have your definition. Although I know you want it to be even more loose, but Eastern Asian professional leagues have my rule, and accept that because most of those leagues can end in a tie if they go 12 innings. You can have a no hitter tie, Eric. Does that not sound appealing to you, lover of ties?
I like ties in a spring training setting.
But what if it was a no hitter tie? How amazing would that be? Come on now.
It would be kind of amazing. Like, for instance, a double perfect game. But then at the same time, right? Like, I would want that game decided, and you could still assuming it goes like into however many extras, you could still recognize it as like, you know, the greatest game ever or whatever, like greatest duel ever, because it was a double perfect game through however many innings, at least nine. And then someone gave up something like in the 11th or whatever. I would rather it be decided.
Right. I don't know. So thank you for the stall. So you're saying over the last 9+ years?
Yeah, since the start of the 2013 season when they – first started this playoff postseason making run.
Yeah, but I'm trying to remember. That's one of those like tweener eras, like between that includes some pre-Friedman, pre-Roberts years.
I will give you a couple hints.
I have some. I have some names written down. I'll rattle them off, and you can give me some hints after that. Kenta Maeda. Yeah.
Maeda, no.
Really? That actually really surprises me. I kind of had him in my head as a, like, innings eater.
No, I mean, you got to remember, though, like, he also was, like, he'd have stretches, right? But then, like,
sure, he would
fade a little bit and then inevitably always end up in the bullpen. Like,
sure, but so, I still, those stretches, to me, lasted longer than six innings, so that surprises me that he didn't do it at least once. Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah, he's the five timer.
Okay.
And he, from as far back as 2013, and then as he had two stretches in 2019, the longest one 11 games. He finished second in the Cy Young Award that year.
Walker Buehler.
Buehler he did it three times. Last year, had his two longest stretches. The first 16 starts of the year. And then one hiccup, and then a 10-start stretch right after that. So he basically went like six innings all the time last year. This year it's been more of a struggle, and we'll get to him in a second. But he's one. He's another one. Yep.
Urias. So you have
three more left.
Urias.
No.
I obviously with the innings limiting, yeah. I was basically banking on last year.
No, I think you're right. I'll look in a second what he did, because I actually, now that I think about it, I'm a little bit surprised that he didn't do it last year.
Considering how many wins he got, you know, obviously if he had done five.
Before I have his game log up, I'm sort of envisioning like there being a bunch of like 6-6-6-6-5-6-6, yeah. You know, like that kind of a thing.
Now I am in the, like, I can't remember what year he left, but I'm going to have to say another name. And if I'm wrong, that's my third strike, and so be it. Zach Greinke.
So Greinke, yeah, he did it twice. Yes. My hint to you before that you didn't take and didn't need it was going to be that two of these pitchers finished second in the Cy Young, and Greinke was the one. And so 2015, every start, all 32, he went at least six innings. And that was the year he had a 1.66 ERA.
Now that you're also
had a stretch in 2013.
All right, yeah. I'm tapping out because I know I'm overthinking at least one of these names. So
you're the other two. One you're not going to get, and the other one.
Thanks, pal.
I almost omitted the question because he was one of the answers, and a certain suspended player,
got it.
Trevor Bauer, did it twice last year. Then the other one, my hint to you is, well, let's see if you get it. My hint for the other player in 2014 is he's never eaten fish.
Yeah, see, this keeps coming up, and I keep forgetting. Yep. is it Rich Hill?
Nope.
Okay, one day I'll remember that. fish hint.
Julio Urias, his longest streak last year was three games of six.
That's interesting.
He kept doing like he would do like he would stagger a little bit, but then like down the stretch he was like, so he had a stretch from July 27th, 5 2/3, and then 5-5-5-5, and then you know like I think they were just you know sort of mindful of his innings, but yeah, Dan Heron was the other one in 2014.
I have it muted, so I can't disseminate what's going on, but Kershaw's being interviewed right now on mute on my TV, and I'm very upset that we're recording during the game.
I'm assuming he's talking about all his various streaks of lasting six innings.
Oh, I remember this one time.
Yeah.
All right. So you have any more on Mr. Buehler?
He's not going to add to his six innings this year.
Who's that?
Is Walker Buehler. This happened since
we
recorded.
What if we include playoffs? He could do it this year.
I'm still taking the
under. Yeah, probably not.
So on Friday, you know, I think even last week we talked about this, like, you know, the sort of question is, or was like, you know, what's going on with Buehler? Why is he not as good this year? That kind of thing. Like his fastball was not as good as it was the last 3 years when it was like one of the best fastballs going. And you know, the issue you're trying to figure out like what exactly is going on. You know, he lost in spin rate, so you could sort of pin it a little bit on that. He still pitched fine after like enforcement started last year. But like the fastball itself. And then, so it's one of those things where you're looking, not excuse is the wrong word, but like, at least it explains some of what's happening.
Usually explanation, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Friday in San Francisco, he left the game after four innings, and it was one of those like, oh, he's not pitching the fifth. It wasn't like one of those like, call a trainer to the mound, walk off the mound, like sort of thing. It was, he pitched four innings, and then next thing we knew, Justin Brule started the fifth. I'm like, what? and so the progression of this was, late in that game, you get the first announcement, Walker Buehler left with right elbow discomfort. And you're like, well, he had Tommy John before. Clearly everyone sort of jumps to that, right? Like, and then MRI Saturday, first MRI results come out like sort of preliminary. The Dodgers put him on the injured list before like the full results were released. And they said right forearm strain. So now you're going elbow and forearm. Okay. Clearly Tommy John, this is a Tommy John thing happening, all this kind of stuff. And then later, I don't remember if this was actually Saturday or Sunday, but it was sort of clarified that, I think it was late Saturday night, that it was clarified that Buehler had a right flexor tendon strain, no tear in the UCL, so no Tommy John, So it's like, it's this weird thing of like, it's almost a relief, right? Like that, okay, he's not out until 2024. And then, but then you're like, but he might not pitch again until 2023. That's sort of on the table. So as of now, he's not going to throw for at least 6 weeks at all, like not playing catch or anything. Then they're going to reevaluate. His sort of timetable for return, if all goes well, is 10 to 12 weeks, which basically means like best case scenario, he's like the very last week of August, maybe. Returning to the Dodgers, but most likely at some point in September. So, like, does that give him enough time to be ready for the playoffs, if all or whatever? So, it's in this weird spot. But then, so this is like the progression through like Sunday, right? So you get this news and you're sort of processing it, and then Monday's an off day. Tuesday happens, the first game of a series against the Angels, and then Buehler talks post game or pregame, excuse me. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I was I met Dr. Delatrash yesterday and had arthroscopic surgery on my elbow, too." And I'm like, "What?" Like, so it's one of those where he said, so he removed bone spurs in his elbow. It's something he said that's been like bothering him the last 3 years, but like he's ended each year like healthy, so like they didn't feel it was necessary to do it yet. And he was thinking about doing that surgery this offseason anyway. And they said the recovery for that is also 10 to 12 weeks. So why not double up? And that's where we're at right now. So Buehler right now is the questiony of question marks, I guess. So possibly later in the season, not sort of ruling that out. But like I think from a realistic standpoint, you're like, it's not something you can definitely count on, which is bad news because, you know, he's been like essentially their like game one starter. I know they acquired like Max Scherzer last year and he technically started one of the game ones, but so that certainly was a blow, but like in a weird way, it also could have been a lot worse. And like, to be fair, it still could be worse. Like Danny Duffy last year, similar timeline in the season, hurt his flexor tendon with the Royals, although it may be a little bit later in the season. And then when he was traded to the Dodgers, then he tried to sort of rehab from that. Same thing, rest and relaxation. And then it turned out that he was going to he ended up not pitching the rest of the year. And then he had to have surgery in October. So, like, that could very well still happen with Buehler. Like, maybe he's not ready later this summer, and then he ends up having surgery, and then he's knocked out for part of next year. Who knows? But it's very much in question right now, and that's a huge bummer for like sort of where they're at. I guess I'll ask you, because I was sort of going through sort of a natural progression there, like how the news came in. How did you sort of receive the news, and do you have any thoughts on that?
That was just generally a game I was following along on Twitter, so it was like Buehler's not coming out, and so anytime that happens, he's pitching fine. So it wasn't definitely, he's hurt, but it was like, that's concerning. And then I think like everyone else, I'm like, that's going to be Tommy John. just assuming that's kind of what was going to happen. And so when the news came out, it was not just, it's not just Tommy John, but like you said, it just offered an explanation. Because if it wasn't, he was hurt, just something was off. And this, honestly, just the way he was pitching this year, not a guy you could rely on.
Right, and it's like, yeah, you're like, oh, is he just bad?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And bad is a relative term, right? He was like still like essentially like a league average starter, I guess, basically.
I mean, like, yeah, similar to like, obviously a much shorter time frame, but Yu Darvish in a World Series, and eventually, he's tipping his pitches. That explains it, because prior to that, he was just so good.
Yeah.
And so just, you know, not that I thought Walker Buehler's tipping his pitches, but something like that is just like, is he doing something that just makes the hitters just able to smash the four-seamer? So,
and I'm sure later, like probably at some point in July, we'll talk about this, but I think it's pretty clear the Dodgers do need to add a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. But I think it's not something they're going to panic on. Like they're basically okay right now. It is sort of funny, I guess, ironic sense that the way baseball works, because we were literally last week talking about, are the Dodgers going to have a six-man rotation once everybody's back? You know, like all this. And so, no, they will not, because they will not have six healthy, active pitchers at the same time. But, yeah, so, like, Andrew Heaney, in theory, is going to be back this weekend. By the, you know, I would imagine this will be out before his potential Sunday start, if that's that, but that's sort of the plan. And once he's in, you know, that'll just add, I don't know, it gives them, you know, five healthy starters for now. They have some off days this week. I think they're basically fine to get to the All-Star break, but I think they'll use that time to sort of figure out exactly what they need. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just that it was a huge bummer for sure.
It was a huge bummer, and that obviously less serious reasons. It's just a 3-game series, but it was a bummer, weird series to end the week too.
Oh yeah, so and then they also got swept in San Francisco.
The whole Giants. Like, oh, you know, the Dodgers never can't hit and runners in scoring position. So often that complaint is small sample size, recency bias, that kind of a thing.
Right.
This is, as much as I can remember in the last few years, an extreme example of that, of just the most.
Yeah.
I like watching baseball. I even when the Dodgers lose, I tend to, and that was a enjoyable experience. I get to hear usually hear Joe Davis. It's just relaxing. That was not fun to watch at any point, really.
So Saturday was like the sort of the perfect storm for that, because they literally got someone on base in every inning, and not until later in the game, they didn't get too many people in scoring position, although they sort of kept racking that up later. And like, they didn't score until the eighth inning, and they only ended up losing that game 3-2, but it was like one of those where they could have scored like 10, you know, like just
also one of the funnier national broadcast arguments in that game over the Dave Roberts wanted it to be a hit by pitch to, and you get a ball declared dead, so a run that got scored on a wild pitch. They went, AJ Brzezinski and Eric Karras went on this for like 20 minutes.
I actually forgot about that because so just peeking behind the curtain a little bit in our notes, this is the section of the notes that just says weird week and I forgot about that, but that definitely qualifies. And then you have to remember to lead into the Giants series. The Dodgers took 2 out of 3 in Chicago, and they won the Thursday game. So we recorded, I believe, during the Wednesday game, if I'm not mistaken, that last week.
Sounds right.
Yeah, but like it was still going as we were recording. So on Thursday, Max Muncy comes back from the injured list, and he hit I think it was a 2-run double earlier, and then the Dodgers are up 7-5. I forgot what inning it was, probably the sixth, something like that, fifth or sixth. And they have Freddie Freeman on first with 2 outs, and then there's it's 0-2 on Trey Turner. There's a lefty pitcher, and Trey Turner's a righty. They throw a wild pitch to Turner, and then Freeman goes to second. So it's 1-2, but first base is now open. Tony La Russa, with a 1-2 count, intentionally walks Trey Turner. To the point where I went back and listened. I was like, wait, what? He's walking him? Like, what happened? And then the Dodgers game, Joe Davis was calling that game with Eric Karras. They were both confused. The Chicago broadcast with Jason Benetti and Steve Stone, they were flummoxed, like, wait, what? What is happening? And then, and to be fair, Muncy has not hit this year, right? Like, he's been pretty terrible and, like, battling stuff. But at the same time, you still don't walk a guy on a 1-2 pitch. and I don't know. So, but and to make matters more hilarious, Max Muncy, he hit a 3-run homer. So, like, it was like the perfect, like, hey, let's get Max Muncy going type of a move. But and then to, like, I think 2 different days, like both post game and like the next day, Tony La Russa was like so flabbergasted that anyone would dare question the move. He's like, are you guys, I think one of his post game question was like, would anyone in here seriously not walk Turner there? And like to reporters, I don't think anyone actually answered him, but it's like, yeah, no, we wouldn't. Like, so very weird. It's just so weird. And like, I don't know that play is not going to have the staying power as the Tommy Pham, Jock Peterson, fantasy football slap,
which is still going on.
It's still going like that Tommy Pham, because so I think what fueled it this time, the Giants had shirts made because the most lucrative baseball related industry is instant t-shirts, and players were walking around with, I think the shirt just said in like, is a black shirt with like orange lettering for the Giants. And it was like, I think it said something like, putting a player on injured reserve isn't against fantasy rules or whatever. And then Tommy Pham's like, yeah, well, Jock played himself because, all I have to do is show the rules of the league, and then the text that I said I'd pimp slap him if he did it. It's like, oh, so you're just a weirdo. Like, all right. But to be fair, I'm not saying Tommy Pham is a weirdo officially. So please don't slap me. But yeah, what a bizarre game this is that we watch. Then also back to the Giants series for a second. Dave Roberts. The offense was slumping so bad, and if we go back there, it's like for about 3 weeks now, no, 2.5, they're averaging like 3.5 runs a game roughly. So this, and then before Sunday's game, like it got to the point where Dave Roberts like essentially called the team out. I use that loosely. He didn't really like call the team out. He's like, basically, we're not doing enough to win. You know, people are not having the right approach, and like, it wasn't like an old school manager, like firing up his team type of a thing, but that's about as much as Dave Roberts is going to throw anyone under the bus. Like, I guess the Sheldon Noisy, like if we stretch, we win type of thing was more direct, but like, this wasn't that, but it was like, you could tell he was like pretty like animated about it. And then they got shut out that day, right after he said it. So I don't know. It was just kind of funny. But then the other weird thing since we recorded, so last night on Tuesday, in the ninth inning of the Angels-Dodgers game, Mike Trout, Craig Kimball got like a foul. No, it wasn't a foul. It was a broken bat single for Mike Trout because it went off of Gavin Lux's glove in short center field. But the bat like just shattered near the knob. And in a weird, like move, like the bat, like that part of the bat, the giant part of the bat that's not, that Trout wasn't holding, sort of like spun backwards, and like it went like shard first into the mask of the home plate umpire Mike Tomlinson, and like found a way like inside the mask, and like hit him like in the eye and cheek nose area. And he went down like immediately, obviously. So we're recording this during Wednesday's game. He's not doing the game. I guess he went to the hospital after the game, and he's okay. But like, he was clearly shaken up. I believe on the broadcast when the Dodgers trainer, Nathan Lucero, was tending to him, I think Tomlinson, it looked like he said, my eye or something. But I don't think it got to that. Like it was one of those where like it probably if it's like a centimeter over, it could have. But like, he was bleeding from the eye, and he had like a towel around his nose, so I think he might have been bleeding in the nose area too. But just one of the freakiest things. I don't know if you saw some of the still shots, but there's one still shot where it captured like Trout's like finishing his swing, and then the bat is just. That part of the bat is behind him, but it's just straight in. It's like someone like a javelin thrower like threw it at the umpire, and it's just like into his mask. It's like the freakiest picture ever. But yeah, thank God he's okay, because that was one of the weirdest weirdest plays I've ever seen. I can't remember ever seeing a a broken bat with that much malice in its heart. It was rough, but it seems like he's like relatively okay.
Speaking of malice in the heart, you have a trivia question for me?
I do. We talked about Walker Buehler, who's now on the injured list. So you get him for free. And I gave you another one for free earlier because I'm a nice guy. But can you name all the current Dodgers pitchers on the injured list?
I will throw some names out after this.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
All the names of injured pitchers for the Dodgers right now, currently on the IL. I've written some names down, so I feel comfortable asking this now. Yeah. How many are there?
Eight.
So I'm missing two. Well, in assuming that I got some of these right, and I'm not being a big brain fart. So I'll give you the six, and we'll see where we would want to go from there. Walker Buehler.
That is correct.
Did you know that?
He is...
Yeah.
He's the only one. Oh no, sorry. He's one of the two on the 10 or the 15-day injured list. For now, he'll be on the 60 at some
point. Did you hear that Andrew Heaney is on the IL?
You know what? I've heard rumors. He last pitched in April.
But I heard on the True Blue weekend. LA lineup podcast that he's coming back soon.
So. That's true. You have the special live version of the podcast that you were listening to. We're offering that up to our subscribers, by the way. It's a special
tier. We have subscribers? Where's my cut?
We'll have details on that on our Patreon.
We have a Patreon? This is dope. Tommy Canely.
Tommy Canely is on the 60-day DL. Bone bruise in his right elbow in May. He's out weeks. The earliest he could be back is basically the All-Star break, but who knows?
Danny Duffy?
Duffy is correct. He was the aforementioned trade guy last year. He re-signed a deal with them that's sort of incentive laden, hoping for June or July.
Dustin May,
recovering from Tommy John surgery, would imagine at some point after the All-Star break. My guess is maybe August at the best case scenario. So yeah.
Blake Treinen
is throwing again, I believe, at some point in the last week. He's throwing up to 120 feet. He's right shoulder discomfort. He's doing the no surgery, rest and rehab thing. And, you know, we'll see how that works. But, like, you know, I don't know if there's a timetable, but it seems like, you know, he's like a maybe, like a July guy, I think, but who knows.
All right, so I'm missing two names. I feel like...
I'll tell you, one of them pitched this year.
Okay. Yeah, not in the thing. And then you just tell me the names, and I'll yeah.
The one who hasn't pitched yet is Jimmy Nelson.
Yep. I was going to say is I feel like there's a guy that, like, they, like, we're in that situation where they're just are.
He had Tommy John and Flexerton in rehab. So so if you average out what could have happened to Walker Buehler and Walker Buehler, they come out to one surgery for those injuries each. But yeah, so he's like a maybe September guy, but he has like a 1-year deal plus an option. And then the other one is Victor Gonzalez, who was injured last year too, but came back left elbow inflammation, and he had elbow surgery. It was arthroscopic in May. He's like another. We'll see what's happening. They have so many guys like that are. Well, let's just see what happens after the All-Star break. You know, we'll see what we have. But like, so it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they sort of handle all of that.
Hey, You know what time it is?
I do know what time it is.
It's time for Questions from Craig.
We love them.
We love it. My turn. Yay. Doing it.
Just right. before you get into this, I just to for sake of completion, the two non-pitchers on the injury list currently are Edwin Rios and Kevin Pillar.
Mm.
Pillar had shoulder surgery, out for the year, basically. So.
Time for another trivia question. And it's really trivia questions. Celebrating Dodger Stadium's 60th anniversary. This week, the Dodgers host the American League's Angels and Guardians at home. But do our listeners know that from 1962 to 1965, both the Dodgers and Angels played their home games at Dodger Stadium? This week's trivia questions are about that period of games in LA. I would do so badly on these questions, I can already tell you.
I'm about to do so badly, I'm sure.
I have the answers in front. Actually, if the answer's in front of me, I would do great. Five Hall of Famers who are primarily known for playing in the American League hit two or more home runs at Chavez Ravine against the Angels from 1962 to 1965 in the regular season. Who are these American League greats?
So the part about that is, like, I was going to bring that up. You noted that, so when for Angels' first 4 years, they played at Dodger Stadium, but Gene Autry, they just called it. They had like a pretty bad deal. I think I wrote about it in April, sort of for an anniversary thing, but the Dodgers got like a cut of their ticket sales and all this, but they didn't want it. You know, they were clearly like the tenants there. It wasn't their stadium. But so Gene Autry was adamant about like never referring to it as Dodger Stadium and only calling it Chavez Ravine and all that. But that's my way of stalling. So 62 to 65, Hall of Famers, primarily in the American League. So let's say... Oh, man. So, okay, Harmon Killebrew?
No.
What about Harmon Killebrew? You know, okay, so, all right, that threw a wrench into my plans because I was, okay, so Mickey Mantle?
Mickey Mantle hit two in 23 games.
Okay. And then I'm having a hard time. So... Wow, this is a weird... Okay, this is against the Angels. So I almost thought there was a loophole around this, but Frank Robinson was not traded to the Orioles until 66. And after the Angels, he was on the Reds before that. So I will not guess him. But just thinking here, I don't know why this is like such a... flummoxing question for me. So let's go. Let's just think. Carl Yastrzemski.
Yep, with two. It was the one I had named a hint for. But his grandson has hit three more than.
I keep forgetting like how they're related. Like
I did think it. I was correct, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure grandson right, but I did have to look it up.
Think,
it's, like,
yeah.
It's not like great uncle or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. It could have been like. Like a nephew or something,
yeah.
Like a great, but yeah, but then you're right. Okay, so more stalling. I'm angry that Harmon Killebrew wasn't one of them. So now, what about?
You have two more strikes.
Somehow. Wait, I don't.
Yeah.
I can't. Oh man. Now, what about Al Kaline?
Hit six in 28 games.
So I'm just having a hard time, like, for some reason.
I'm going to give you a big hint, which means you're just going to get it. You were on the right track with an Oriole named Robinson.
Okay. So how about let's go with Brooks Robinson.
There you go. And then I'm going to give you two guesses, and my hint is it's another Yankee.
Another Yankee. Okay, so this is weird because it's sort of, I'll just say Yogi Berra.
You are dead on the money. In 9 games, 2 home runs.
I was going to say, because he ended up, like, I don't remember if he could have, like, played in 64 at some point, but he was their manager. No,
just
64.
Just 63. 62 and okay. 63. Yeah, yeah. 2 home runs in 9 games. Unreal. Real cool.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite chapters in the Baseball 100, by the way, I think.
Oh, I have that book literally sitting on my table right now, my dining room table, but I haven't read it. I've read certain pieces of it as they were going up online right last year, but
it's real good.
Yeah.
6 Hall of Famers scored 10 or more runs against the Angels in that same period. Can Eric name them? I will let you know, 4 of them were on the previous list.
Okay, so we'll go Mantle, Brooks Robinson.
Yep.
Yastrzemski and Kaline.
You got them all. So you need 2 more names that weren't on the previous list.
All right. So for some reason my brain is having a hard time. I mean, I could name like all 30 teams now, and for some reason there's something in my brain like prohibiting me from naming the teams from then, even though they exist, like they all exist now. So good Lord. So what about more Orioles thing. Yeah, this is bad. I don't know why I can't think of this. What about, I can't remember any Hall of Famers on the A's at that point.
Neither of these were A's players.
Okay.
I'm going to double check real quick that they didn't have like a stray.
Not
primarily A's player. One player did play briefly for, here's a hint, for Philadelphia.
What about, Rocky Calavito?
Nope.
You know what? I'm kind of tapped out on this. I don't know why, but I'm
so one. I'm is, like, one is Nelly. I'm going to give you Nelly Fox, and then right. I'm going to give you one more guess on the other one. And I'll say you will be very mad at yourself if you don't guess this player.
Okay, 10 runs. For some reason, I was like, wait a minute, Eddie Murray was like not even, he was a kid. thinking, and this is Hall of Fame only. Okay. 62 to 65. Why can't I think of any names? Yeah, I am going to be mad.
Oh, the answer is Harmon Killebrew.
All right. That's hilarious. Okay.
4 Hall of Fame pitchers have had game scores of 75 or better against the Angels in those 4 seasons. Can Eric name those Hall of Famers? You know, they were using game score back then. Right. Yeah, each of those pitchers also pitched the Dodgers in those seasons, in either the regular season or in the World Series.
Wait, say that again?
The hint is each of these pitchers also pitched against the Dodgers in those seasons, in either the regular season or in the World Series.
Wait.
I'm just reading what he said.
It can't be the same. I mean, I know, because the one guess is going to be Whitey Ford.
Correct. Did it 3 times.
Okay.
I will try to figure out how that works.
Because unless all of these were on the 63 Yankees...
Well, I think what he's saying is that they perhaps changed teams in the mid in 62 to 65.
No. So, you know what? I will go back to Jim Cott.
Jim Cott did it once, and I'm looking up the other players for you. And yes, both these players at some time in that period pitched for a National League team.
Okay, but not, yeah. All right.
There you go. I will give you $20 if you name either of these players in three guesses.
That's hilarious. Okay.
You have three strikes. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
And I will buy you $20 of beer.
What about Jim Bunning?
I owe you $20 of beer. Dang, man. Good job.
Wait, I thought it was both.
Said either, but I mean both. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's how I took the spirit of it.
In LA, $20 is like half a beer. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. I'm noted LA bar maven, Eric Steven. Let's see.
And not that these are super obscure players, by the way, just that I thought getting to it would be tough, and I'm impressed that you got your one down.
You were rightfully thinking of how I was flummoxed with the Harmon Killebrew of the previous. In similar fashion, I'm having a hard time. Bob Lemon?
Strike one.
Okay. This is difficult. I don't know why I'm having trouble figuring it out. Like, this is weird because I'm like simultaneously trying to think, well, who pitched also in the National League in that time? But like, that is just adding another layer that's paralyzing me.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to tap out. Just give it to me.
I'm going
to
give you one hint and then one more guess. And yeah, let me know if that hint helps. If it doesn't, move on. This pitcher took second in MVP votes in 1952.
52. Oh, wait. No, he couldn't have. Wait. Hold on. I could have swore he didn't start like after that first year. But I'm just going to say Hoyt Wilhelm.
Robin Roberts, nice. Who has played majority of his starter's career in Philly, but switched to Baltimore in 62, but was traded from Baltimore to Houston in 65. And apparently got a game in there.
That's really good. I like it.
All right, final question. In those first four seasons, the Major League Baseball Cy Young Award winner pitched their home games in Los Angeles. Dean Chance was the 1964 Cy Young Award honoree, and he pitched for the Angels in each of those seasons. Can Eric name the Hall of Fame players who struck out at least five times against Chance at Chavez Ravine? Hint, they have all been a prior answer to the earlier questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll go Mantle.
Yes, eight
we'll
times.
We'll go my good friend Harmon Killebrew.
10 times.
Finally, I get a Harmon Killebrew one.
Sorry, there's. I'm really. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
How many? Wait, how many players are there total?
There are the. He shouldn't say. I have to count. So he's looking for five or more. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Or no, sorry, six.
Okay.
I have two additional names on here.
Got it. So I'm just going for the longevity again. Let's go with Al Kaline.
Yeah, only did it three times. He was one of the additional names. Threw me off.
Carl Yastrzemski?
Seven times.
Now it's a matter. Okay, so only nine games, but you know what? Tail end of his career. We're going with Yogi Berra again for some reason.
Nope.
Yeah, that was a long shot. This is the Eric can't remember who he guessed earlier portion of the proceed. Oh, Brooks Robinson.
Yep.
I don't remember anyone else.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you because I think you are blind spotting one thing, which is when the DH rule went into effect. Jim Cott, Whitey Ford are the other two.
I love it. I'm actually not mad at
that. Yeah, that made me happy. Those were good. That was a good set.
They're very good, and I hate Craig so much. No, that's not possible. I love it.
as of this writing, the rule change to the roster composition is supposed to start next Monday. 13 pitchers and 13 position players. Is it Zach McKinstry for Phil Bickford? And would having Mitch White on the active roster be more helpful than David Price?
To the second point first, I mean, in theory, yes, Mitch White would probably be better than David Price. However, I think Mitch White right now is clearly the number six and the guy they would probably use for at least a spot start during the 20 games and 20 days they have coming up starting next week. That said, on the 13 pitcher thing, I don't want it to happen, but I do think they're going to, at some point later this week, say that, oh, Major League Baseball and the Players Association has agreed to extend the 14 pitchers for like two more weeks or whatever it is. Like, you know, they'll do it. So, but if they go back to 13, like, yeah, it really shows you like how much losing Edwin Rios hurt, like the depth. Because right now they have Eddie Alvarez, along with Hanser Alberto, who really hasn't hit at all. Although he wasn't, to be fair, wasn't really expected to hit. Maybe a little better against lefties, but he provides defense basically. And then Austin Barnes is the bench, so it's a rough bench as is, and like having like Zach McKinstry as your sort of next guy, that's kind of a rough spot to be in, but. So, like, but yeah, I mean, it probably, like, if they have to go back to 13, that he's, unless they do, like, the pick whichever, like, hot sort of veteran minor league guy, which they did with Kevin Pillar earlier, and then he got hurt, and then Eddie Alvarez after that. So it could be, like, Jake Lamb or Stefan Romero or something like that. The weird, like, sort of wild card, I don't think it's going to happen, but, like, I've seen people ask about, like, Miguel Vargas, who's really holding his own, like, in AAA and doing really well, but, like, they're not going to call him up to be a bench guy, right? Like, they, and I don't think they're necessarily going to call him up to, like, be a third baseman right now or whatever, like, so, yeah, it's probably McKinstry is my guess, but I don't know. I don't have a real good read on that. But yeah, it's basically something like that. You know, they have a number of guys who could be sort of optioned, and but yeah, that McKinstry for Bickford is as fair as it gets, or like, you know, reasonable as it gets given the choices.
This weekend, the Dodgers will unveil their second statue at Dodger Stadium, this time honoring Sandy Koufax. While the three of us likely agree that the Dodgers should retire Fernando Valenzuela's number, we do, right? Yeah, you're not being a rear contrarian on this side, I assume. Nope. I think an iconic image of Fernando looking towards to the sky as he winds up would be a perfect third statue. What do you two think?
And just to put a bow on it, Fernando did have a no-no, as you like to call it, in 1990. Fernando would be great. And specifically with him looking to the sky in mid-windup, that would be a wonderful idea for a statue. So,
and like, I'm in. Yes, his number should be retired. Like, this feels like this comes up fairly often on this podcast. Yeah. It just,
well, the get the over it.
Here's the thing. If Jim Gilliam wasn't retired, at least I could like give a go. Fine. You really, really are going to be that hard. Then yeah, give him this. I disagree, but fine. But to give him a statue because of just how important he is to Dodger Stadium and to the Los Angeles Dodgers. But you did.
The thing with Fernando is his number is retired.
That's yes, exactly. Like, exactly.
No one's worn it. They won't give it out. Like, it is retired. They have done everything to retire that number except actually honor the man with an official ceremony, which is just wrong. So give him the statue same day you retire the number, whatever you got to do.
That mini rant I just went on, I hit dictate on my phone, so I have that saved in text form. That's good. The current breakdown by monthly splits for the AL and NL show gradual offensive improvement since the beginning of the season. Do you think this is related to the weather warming up a bit, or did it take time for the players to adjust to any changes to the baseball? I think it's just weather.
Yeah, it's probably weather, but also like the ball is almost certainly have changed. Like, yes. It's been like inconsistent. So like, and the players never seem to know like what ball they're going to get, like, you know, at any given time. And MLB's like, I don't know, or, you know, our specifications say this, you know, they're never going to admit to it until someone calls them on it. And so who knows exactly what's going on, but yeah, it's certainly like baseball is a little different, but also the weather, like, you know, you're going to get more home runs. And it'd be interesting to see if there's any particular change once teams have to go down to 13 pitchers, if it has any sort of effect on like how you use different pitchers, like either making starters go deeper or bullpens being worse, you know, like whatever, just generally. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but we're about, you know, getting into the real hot part of the weather for the season. So it should be interesting to see sort of how that plays out in rest of June and July, and I guess into August.
I have to sort through my email real quick for the last question, because I think you may, yes, you did not copy all of it. So I'm going to read what I have in the show notes, because I think it's very funny. Happy Father's Day, Jacob. While Mother's Day conjures up images of kids making their mom breakfast in bed, Father's Day tends to put Dad in the barbecue grill outside to cook for the family. This week I am asking Eric and Jacob about a classic protein on the grill, chicken. And that's all I had. So I was like, chicken, your thoughts.
I'm a fan.
Real quick before I move on to the actual question, which Craig did send along. It is gross, hot, humid here in Kansas. I am not going outside at all. Melissa, anyways, tends to be the griller of the family. When I do like burgers and steak, I tend to do it on a pan over the stove. So none of that is happening. I am sleeping in. I think I'm going to get pizza of some sort. It's going to be delicious.
I am going to, I believe, have breakfast with my aunt and uncle and some cousins in the morning. But other than that, I don't plan to be outside. So, yeah.
Do you prefer the sweet and tangy barbecue chicken, a citrus marinade grilled chicken pieces, or perhaps some versions of chicken on a stick? Or maybe even the old chicken cooked in a beer can. Name me some of your favorite ways to eat chicken from the great outdoors. Yaki, grilled chicken sticks with some green onion were a big hit when I was in Japan. Very cheap, very tasty, usually with a Japanese barbecue sauce. I don't really like citrus marinade grilled chicken pieces, but the barbecue chicken, especially shredded with some pickles and a lot of sauce, that's the way for me.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I would say for the citrus, like, it, I guess it depends on how you, depending on what marinade you use for carne asada, because like some, you could have like essentially like not necessarily orange juice, but like, you know, orange and other stuff in a carne asada type marinade. So I think that would count, or I guess pollo asada in this case. So I think that would count. That's up there for me. I think like barbecue can, like, or beer can chicken is pretty good. But like if it's literally like just on a grill, I would prefer probably like either the sort of barbecue marinated chicken breast and thighs. I grew up, and the large part of my early adulthood, like, insisting on white meat, and I've since learned that was incorrect. And so I like it all now. But yeah, chicken thighs are really good. But I have a hard time picking between like a barbecue type marinade or Craig, I guess I don't know any other way to put it other than like a citrus marinade. Yeah. Like that's a pretty good.
Grilling is fairly low on my list of chicken prep. Smoked very high, sous vide very high.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll do it. But typically with grilling, I'm going to with the burgers and sausages and hot dogs and maybe a steak, but again, I tend to prefer pan frying that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well,
that said, I still want chicken, so I'm going to.
Craig has made us hungry, and God, we recorded this at night. It's much more difficult to go out and get the food he talked about. And I'm still mad because I can't remember if it was last week or the week before. I didn't actually go out and get donuts, and I should have. But, oh well. So go out right now, everybody. Get some chicken, get some donuts. Catch up on our food talk from previous podcasts. But thanks for listening to The Lineup with True Blue LA. And we will talk to you again next week.